Trigger warning. The following episode contains references to gore, sexual assault, sexual content, human suffering, mental conditions, death, factual inaccuracies, several entitled people making light of all these things. If any of the aforementioned topics cause you discomfort, you may want to listen to a different episode.
Look, James Watt, the lobotomy signal. Quick, to the lobotomobile. I'm Adam.
Look, if he didn't want the lobotomy, he should have canceled it in the first place.
I'm Andy.
Now, little Timmy, if you don't go to bed like a good boy, Dr. Freeman's coming with the hammer. I'm Kelly.
Clang, clang, Freeman's silver hammer came down into your eye. This is Acid Pop, and I'm Sean.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. Today on Acid Pop, we're going to be talking about Walter Jackson Freeman II.
It's a fancy name.
It is a fancy name. And as far as he's concerned, he's a fancy man.
Very fancy.
For those of you that don't know, Walter Jackson Freeman II was one of the most fervent proponents of the wonders of the lobotomy. So we're going to learn a little bit more about lobotomies, and we're going to learn a lot more about Walter Freeman.
And some about ourselves.
The etymology of lobotomy comes from Greek lobos, which means a pod, and tomos, we learned on our amputations episode, means to cut. So to cut out the head pods.
Fun.
My head pods.
When did lobo start meaning wolf? Oh no, that's romantic languages.
Yeah.
That's Spanish.
So today we're actually going to do our quiz at the end, because we're going to save the shocking figures for when we have a little more context about our hero here. The thing about people in history that I feel like people tend to lose sight of, and I try not to, is that no one is a villain in their own head. In everyone's own mind, they're doing what they think is best. And even if it means doing bad things, they're trying to have positive outcomes come the finish. And Walter Freeman is no different. So first, we're going to give a little bit of context for him. But rest assured, he was not a good man. And we'll learn about why. So Walter Freeman was born on November 14th, 1895. He was the son and grandson of doctors, and he graduated from Yale University and went on to the University of Pennsylvania Medical School, where he studied neurology.
Sounds trustworthy so far.
Yeah. He moved to Washington, D.C. and became the city's first neurologist. As such, he worked at St. Elizabeth's Hospital, one of the country's largest psychiatric facilities. Now, this is where everything started to go wrong. psychology was still in its early stages, and honestly, it still kind of is, but Freud and Jung were first postulating the concepts that physical manifestations of negative behavior might just be happening because of something wrong with that pink squishy thing between your ears.
Freud, another interesting character.
Yeah. But this was truly a generation where scientists were throwing ideas at the wall to see what stuck.
Well, with what some call like the age of heroic doctors or heroic scientists, which means you did a lot of bad stuff, basically.
So brave.
Yeah. Sometimes that's how you learn, unfortunately. So people were diagnosed as mentally deficient for everything from violent schizophrenia to constant headaches. And these people were basically locked in nightmarish facilities. In these psychiatric wards, here's some of the healing techniques that were tried. There was hydrotherapy. In this, patients were put into a warm bath that was meant to calm them.
Sounds good so far.
To make sure they stayed calm and warm, patients were placed in a warm bath that had a heavy canvas stretched over the top with a hole for them to poke their heads out.
Okay.
All right, kind of seeing the nightmare angle now.
They would be left in these tubs for several days.
Oh, no!
It's so pruny.
Popping up like soggy groundhogs to eat their meals every day.
Please put some scrambled eggs near the hole.
Better hope a polar bear isn't waiting up there.
Alternatively, they could be doused with hot and cold water back and forth in an effort to shock some sense into them.
Well, yeah, that works for me every time.
It's a medical term.
There was also electroshock therapy.
Sure, classic.
Yep. The goal of this therapy was basically to restart the brain. In it, patients would be they would be strapped down and electrodes would be applied, usually to their head. Then, an electric current would be run through the patient's head at an increasing voltage until the patient lost consciousness and started having seizures. That's when you know it's working.
Yeah, boy, I hope I have a low tolerance for that.
As seen in the movie Return to Oz.
Really?
According to doctors at the time, positive results started to come about around the 10th or 15th session.
Duh.
In the meantime, patients would stumble about dazed and confused and would experience short-term and long-term memory loss.
Just all around memory.
Some studies showed as many as 1 in 10 patients experienced memory loss.
Some of them became the protagonists of the movie Powder.
This seems like the beatings will continue until morale improves approach.
Yeah.
I think I'm better now.
I'm all cured.
I no longer have headaches.
There was also chemically induced seizures. Dr. Ladislas von Meduna noticed that very few epileptics had schizophrenia. Ergo, seizures cure schizophrenia.
That's some strong science.
The logic
science.
Is solid.
That's some good syllogism reasoning.
So Dr. Meduna spent a long time trying to figure out how to induce seizures consistently. He tried absinthe, caffeine, strychnine, and none of those worked quite as well as he would have liked.
Strychnine?
Yep. He eventually settled on a drug called metrazol. While it could reliably induce seizures, they were often so violent that patients broke their own bones, usually their jaw.
Did he try the Pokemon cartoon?
So this was the best option for chemical seizures at the time. This was the environment that Freeman found himself in.
It's a playground.
He thought that the conditions at these institutions was horrible, which it was, and he very much wanted to get the patients back home with their families. And in fact, that sort of became a slogan of his, which was get them home. Around this time, Dr. Antonio Moniz was developing a technique he called prefrontal leucotomy as a treatment for certain mental disorders, mostly different types of psychoses. In it, the skull would be cut open and a loop of wire would be run around the frontal lobe, severing the connection to the rest of the brain.
No one needs that bit.
So Dr. Moniz noted that there were severe changes in personality afterwards. But given that the patients he performed this on were anxious, hallucinating insomniacs, he felt that the good outweighed the bad.
No, you take out the frontal lobe, you just become a dick like Phineas Gage.
Can't really always ask them their opinion afterwards anyway.
Yeah. So Freeman became infatuated with this technique, so much so that he nominated Moniz for the Nobel Prize, which he won.
What?
Yep. He wanted to start trying it straight away, but the problem was that Freeman lost his license to perform surgery after his last patient died. So he hooked up with a neurosurgeon by the name of James Watt. So Dr. Moniz performed the procedure in 1935. Freeman and Watt tried out their modified lobotomy technique in 1936 on a housewife named Alice Hood Hammett. She suffered from severe anxiety, and according to her husband, she was a much happier person after the surgery.
They couldn't ask her because yeah. She was drooling too much.
Are you happy, wife?
At this point, the lobotomy technique was to drill a pair of 2-centimeter holes into the top of the head, insert a sort of metal hook, and sever the connection to the frontal lobes, and the procedure took about an hour.
Nothing wrong with that.
Some call it the Candyman technique.
This was the first frontal lobe severing surgery in the U.S. Knowing what we know now, this patient should have been closely monitored for adverse effects and undergone several rigorous tests to see if there were any side effects.
Well, you know hindsight, right?
Instead, Mrs. Hammett went home, and Freeman and Watt performed 20 more lobotomies in the next 2 months.
Jeez.
Stop.
Stop the breaks.
Well, that's better than what I thought he was going to say. I thought he was going to say next few hours.
Next.
So the pair kept up a cracking pace, and by 1942, they had performed over 200 lobotomies and published the results stating that 63% of the patients had good outcomes, 24% were unchanged, and 14% had negative outcomes.
63% is a failing grade in most schools.
Yeah. As we'll see, Freeman was not the best judge when it came to things like good outcomes. But even by his generous standards, 63% is not high enough for me to roll those dice.
He just got a D minus in surgery. It's fine.
Those people don't matter anyway.
They're crazy.
So this, however, did not worry Freeman. He only had one worry, which was, these lobotomies are take so dang long.
Them bills. That's his worry.
So there had to be a faster way. In 1945, he started playing around with the idea of severing the frontal lobes via the eye.
I started thinking about it. It's bad.
So in 1946, he performed the first transorbital lobotomy on a 29-year-old housewife. So here's how this works. The patient is laid down on a gurney. Electroshocks are administered until the patient is rendered unconscious. No anesthesia is administered. Then Freeman takes an ice pick, slides it in next to your eye, and pushes it back until he can't push it back any further. Then he hits the ice pick with a hammer to crack through the skull into the brain.
Stop. My eyes are closed so hard right now.
This is the best part, guys.
My tear ducts hurt.
He then swirls it around back there for a minute or two and finally repeats the process on the other eye.
I hope they didn't say that in the guide. Like, after you break the skull, swirl it around a bit.
Yep, that was it.
Work it like a cotton candy machine.
And we'll link some video on our website to the procedure and as Freeman walks us through how it's done. So if you're feeling up for it, you can go watch this performed.
It is truly ghoulish.
Yep. So Mrs. Lonesco, which was the housewife that this procedure was done to, went in because she was depressed and suicidal. Afterwards, Mrs. Lonesco was no longer depressed or suicidal.
Yay. Instead,
not much of anything.
Mission accomplished.
She spent a lot of time staring at walls and smiling. In Freeman's eyes, the technique was now perfect.
Ah, oh, it's magnificent.
What do you think about the procedure?
I like fruit.
Perfect.
So Freeman took off across the country, shouting out the benefits of lobotomies for all to hear.
Road trip.
Yep.
Handing out free ice picks. Try it on your kids.
Swirl it around.
You have to provide your own hammer.
So Freeman had a boisterous personality, and this took over as he toured from mental hospital to mental hospital. His attitude was less like a doctor and more like a carnival barker. While he traded out the ice pick for a more medical tool, he kept his carpenter's hammers because he felt they were more showy. Whenever possible, he would perform his procedure in front of crowds, preferably in operating theaters, where he would smile, shout, laugh, and perform the procedure with a showman's flair and without gloves or a mask. Sometimes he would hammer through both eyes at once like some sort of demented John Henry.
Gotta beat that machine. I would be surprised if eventually he trades in the carpenter's hammers for like a big boardwalk strongman mallet.
Adam, are you telling me there's some sort of steampunk robot hammering ice picks into people's brains?
It's gotta be stopped.
I'm picturing his doctor's jacket is like covered in glitter.
Yeah.
And it's got the red and white stripes.
Oh, he vajazzled.
Vajazzled.
So James Watt came to his senses and no longer wanted to be associated with Freeman. He felt the procedure was cruel and overused, but Freeman was riding high. He renamed his van the Lobotomobile and continued to tour around the nation, expounding the wonders of his miracle cure.
Oh, sure, but when I do it, they won't give me a vanity plate.
Okay, the man is now officially a Batman villain.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So Freeman caught the attention of Joe Kennedy, father of President John Kennedy, Senator Robert Kennedy, and Senator Ted Kennedy. Joe also had a daughter named Rosie Kennedy. When John's wife, Rose, was in labor with Rosie, the doctor was running a little late, and so the attending nurse had Rose cross her legs to try and stave off labor. When that didn't work, Rosie's head started to poke out, and the nurse pushed the baby back in until the doctor
just
arrived.
Put it back in there.
It's a one-way street.
You're not done baking.
Likely as a result of this, Rosie had some mental issues. She had a slightly lower than average IQ and was prone to outbursts, mostly over the fact that her siblings got to lead normal lives while she was confined to the house or, more frequently, mental institutions. When Rosie started sneaking out at night, Joe became worried that her behavior might cause a scandal and that could tarnish the political careers of his sons. Without consulting the rest of the family, Joe contacted Freeman and Watts, who told him that a lobotomy was just what Rosie needed to mellow her out.
Oh, yeah.
In yet more proof that Freeman was just flying by the seat of his pants, for this option, Rosie was left awake while two holes were drilled into her head. She was then instructed to sing songs, such as the Star Spangled Banner, while they cut into her brain.
Excuse me?
Tell us how much you love America.
When she could no longer remember the words to the song, they decided she'd had enough.
The spot, yeah, we're banger.
They sealed her head up and sent her on her way. But Rosie was left destroyed by the operation. Her left side was partially paralyzed. Her left hand became a withered claw. She couldn't talk, couldn't eat, and became incontinent. Not wanting to draw attention to the incident, Joe whisked Rosie away to a mental institution without telling any of the family members where she had gone. She would remain alone in various institutions for the next 20 years, until Joe had a stroke and forgot to pay the medical bills.
Did anywhere along the lines one of the other Kennedys say, like, hey, anyone seen Rosie?
Yeah, they would.
I believe the mother actually has a lot, or had a lot of, regrets about this?
Yeah.
I wonder why.
Yep. So, when Rose finally found out where her daughter was, she went to see her. When Rosie saw her mother for the first time in 20 years, she ran up to her and promptly started to beat her. Rosie was furious about what happened and how she had been treated, and devoted what little mental faculty she had left to resentment towards her family.
Proof that there was something wrong with her. Yeah. What was she so upset about?
Hey, I thought the lobotomy worked.
We did everything we could to protect our public image.
So the list of people that Freeman broke in his career is almost too long to compile. And the crazy thing was, almost without exception, Freeman felt that he was helping these people.
Yep.
After one lobotomy, he positively reported that his patient was a smiling, lazy, and satisfactory patient with the personality of an oyster.
That's what I need in a patient. Lazy and satisfactory.
The personality of an oyster, so it licks a lot of stuff.
She pours and pours from an empty coffee pot. She can't remember my name.
Should not be your role model.
This
oyster.
This is a good thing. So one patient expressed concerns over having her beautiful hair shaved off for the procedure. Freeman assured her that he would do his best not to shave her head, though in the end he did anyway. He felt heartened afterward, though, that the patient went from person to person, babbling incoherently. She seemed totally unaware that she was completely bald.
Oh, Freeman.
Tennessee Williams' sister was lobotomized, which, if you couldn't tell from his work, left him feeling rather guilty for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Watch Night of the Iguana.
Yeah. One patient went to see Freeman because she had excessive headaches. While she was cured of her headaches, many years later, her daughter described her by saying, she had no concept of social graces. Her only outlet was beating every pinball machine in town and knowing how many pennies were in the jar at the carnival.
Was her name Tommy?
Headaches, you say? Let me get my metal spike and hammer.
She was the greatest playmate we ever had and the best friend. We loved her to death, but I never called her mom or anything. Another man died during the procedure when Freeman stopped partway through and turned to smile and have his picture taken.
Oh, God, Freeman.
Hello.
On one occasion, a man had signed up for a lobotomy, but had second thoughts and decided not to go through with it. Freeman went to his hotel room and brought his trusty electroshock paddles to try and put the man at ease.
Somehow it had the opposite effect.
But the man ran away, screaming for help. Freeman tackled him to the ground and gave him some shocks to calm him down.
Jeez.
The man ended up passing out, and so Freeman decided that the best way to show him what a great thing lobotomies were to perform them on him while he was on the floor of his hotel room.
He's long ago now, he's graduated to mad scientist.
Right. Several steps ago, you were a villain. Now you're like a super villain.
He pulled out his trusty picks and hammer out of his pockets and did the man a favor.
He just carries them?
Yep. In his pockets.
Well, we're moving from Batman villain to, like, Bioshock villain at this point.
Like, what separates him from, like, a regular doctor and a serial killer at this point? Like, there's a line that was crossed somewhere.
Because they ain't dead. They just pour from an empty coffee pot for hours.
So things that were considered appropriate conditions for receiving lobotomies included depression, anxiety, alcoholism, drug addiction, or being a sexually active woman.
Oh, I qualify for all but one of those. I'm not addicted to drugs.
And giving the time that we're in, it goes without saying, homosexuality.
Sure. I think hysteria fell under there.
Yep. Probably the most well-known recipient of a lobotomy was Howard Dooley, who was lobotomized at age 12 because his stepmother said, "He objects to going to bed but sleeps well. He does a good deal of daydreaming, and when asked what about, he says, oh, I don't know. He turns lights on when there is broad daylight outside."
He's a 12-year-old. Get rid of his brain.
So Mr. Dooley's stepmom talked his dad into it, and they decided to perform the procedure without telling him what was going on. Afterward, Mr. Dooley's dad confessed to his son what they had done to him, but he said he took it without a quiver. He sits quietly grinning most of the time and offers nothing.
No shit!
And that's how it went with most of his patients. Frequently, lobotomized people were reduced to the intellect of a 3-year-old. They would stare off into space and seem to lack any emotional response to anything. They would become incontinent and become obsessed with playing with their own genitals. So basically, Freeman turned them into toddlers.
But did they go to bed when they were told to?
Sometimes. But in his mind, no one knew how to deal with a schizophrenic, but anyone could manage to care for a toddler. So as the evidence stacked up against lobotomies, Freeman never wavered from his devotion to the procedure, though he was finally banned from performing lobotomies after inadvertently killing a patient in 1967 while performing her third lobotomy.
Ugh. But he wasn't banned during the selfie incident.
Nope.
Or when he tackled a man in a hotel room and gave him a lobotomy against his will.
Nope. So after he could no longer perform the operation, he went on a journey to visit his old patients in 1968 to show how well they were doing.
Does this end in a hanging?
Well, he actually died of cancer in 1972, and I can only assume that in the intervening 4 years, he couldn't gather enough good evidence to show how beneficial lobotomies were.
Well, you know, in between being chased by villagers with pitchforks.
If only. And that is Walter Jackson Freeman II.
I'm disgusted.
Yeah, he's a pretty awful guy.
And like you said, he truly believed in this so much that the guy who was like, I don't really need a lobotomy, is like, no, no, no.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
You do wonder where the line between like thinking you're doing a good thing and narcissism lays. Like, yeah. The man had a God complex. That much is clear.
It does seem like it was pretty intertwined.
He needed help. You know, maybe a lobotomy, something to bring him back down to earth.
I can solve any mental problems.
Yeah. And the thing is, this just shows how far a positive personality can take you, because in the late 1940s and early 1950s, lobotomies really were all the rage. I mean, he went on and on about how amazing they were, and people believed him. People would come to him and ask him to lobotomize them. This is how good of a showman he was. And he, like you said, he really believed it, but he just couldn't see how awful the things he was doing was. So now we're going to get to our acid pop quiz. So we'll
hope you're taking notes.
So we'll start by asking, how many patients did Freeman lobotomize?
I don't remember the actual numbers. I'm going to ballpark and say 1,100.
Okay.
3,000.
I mean, when you're tackling them in hotels and using the two hammer technique.
Yeah, you can make your own business.
Can you imagine walking into, like, you walk into the hall of your hotel and there's a man straddling another man with two hammers above his head?
It's okay. I'm a doctor.
I'm going to say 5,000.
Yeah. You guys are aiming a little high.
Oh.
Between 1949 and 1952, there were roughly 50,000 people lobotomized in the U.S. Of those...
Did you mean a little low?
Well, no, no. That was total. He didn't do all of them.
Oh.
But of that 50,000, Freeman performed 3,500, or about 7%, in one man.
Jeez.
And 2,500 of those were using the ice pick technique.
Ugh.
It's so efficient.
Yeah.
How many eyes did he pop?
I don't know. I don't know that he ever blinded anybody.
Well, I take it back. He sounds like a great guy.
Let's rewind that. We don't know that he blinded anybody with their eyes. He might have blinded people by scrambling their brain.
Yeah, by, you know, severing that portion of the brain.
So in what may be his record-setting couple of weeks, how many lobotomies did Freeman perform?
I've heard these numbers before. I just cannot remember them.
Yeah. I'm going to say 300. Like, he went on a cross-country tour and he was like, it's time for lobotomies, folks. This is my lobotovan.
Said 3 weeks?
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
600.
I'm going to shoot way lower. I'm going to say he could do a couple a day, and he probably only worked 5 days a week. So we're going to say 10 on the low end. We'll say he was really pushing it. We'll say 15.
15 in a week?
In 2 weeks.
15 in 2 weeks. Freeman performed 228 lobotomies.
Wow, shut.
During the West Virginia state-sponsored Operation Ice Pick.
Oh, God. West Virginia. West Virginia.
You're on notice.
You're on notice as a state.
Come on down to lobotomy days.
Buy one, get one free. Bring your
friends.
Free
hot dogs and balloons for mom.
So what proportion of Freeman's patients were women?
Oh, it's going to be high.
I'm going to say...
I'm going to say children, like, were a large... I'm going to say 52%. I think that disobedient children were also a problem.
I think it's definitely over half. I'm going to say 60. I'm just sticking with sixes.
I'm going to say 70.
Well, you guys got right in there, is between 60 and 80%. At this point in history, men could have their wives or daughters lobotomized against their will, and frequently did.
As we saw with Rosie.
Yep.
America. America.
And just for to clarify, Andy, children do have sexes, so.
Well, yes, but
children aren't women.
He lobotomized men, women, and children.
Yes, I suppose I kind of separated women and children
for the whole family.
So what was the youngest patient Freeman ever lobotomized?
Going to be younger than 12. Oh, God, you're breaking my heart.
You are breaking. I'm going to say 6 months.
That's way lower than I was thinking.
It's crying too much.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 3.
I'm going to be hopeful for a certain quality version of hope and say 5.
You're making everyone very sad, Sean.
Well, it's estimated that he lobotomized 19 minors, including a 4-year-old who was suspected of having schizophrenia.
Suspected.
Well, just to note, signs of schizophrenia typically don't show up until at least the age of 16.
And most 4-year-olds talk to themselves.
Yeah.
Or anything, really. I observe them quite often.
Got a lobotomy for pretending too much.
This is my imaginary friend. Oh, you're going to the doctor.
All I've gotten through this whole thing is that, like, I'm a prime candidate for a lobotomy.
Yeah. I think
same here.
Everybody just about is in his book.
I check a lot of his boxes.
Tell you what, though, it would reduce my worries by a lot.
Your anxiety would go down.
Yeah. Just smile and stare at the doorknob.
Pee yourself.
Yeah.
Was that a command?
And that was all of the information that I felt worth telling about Walter Jackson Freeman II, who, just to point out, I never called a doctor once in this whole episode. Does anybody have any personal stories about lobotomies?
Well, Adam and I, the reason we know about this man is from our the podcast. This podcast is based off Caustic Soda,
mm-hmm.
as well as an episode of Lore.
Mm.
Which is very good if you
which is
means.
A podcast, but it's all this episode in particular was made into a live action thing for Amazon Prime.
Ah.
So if you have Amazon Prime, Lore is a great show.
Yeah.
And just they show that horrible footage of the man hammering the ice picks into people's eyes, basically.
Yeah. People frequently, and not just like the public, but doctors would pass out watching Freeman do his work.
Yeah, good, great. He's a great guy.
Well, I would like to thank Jennifer Wright, who wrote an excellent book called Get Well Soon. And this book is about various plagues that have happened to humanity. And Walter Jackson Freeman was his own plague.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
It's quite an accomplishment, really.
I don't have any personal stories about lobotomy, although I have seen a lot of Tennessee Williams plagues.
Well, I will admit, I struggled for a long time coming up with a what are your morals worth for today's episode.
I'm not doing it.
Yeah. So I had to turn the volume down almost to nothing. So we're going to ask, how much would I have to pay you to work in a lobotomy patient recuperation facility for a year? So basically to deal with a bunch of 150 to 200 pound three-year-olds all day long.
Do I know what I know now?
Yeah.
Can't.
No?
I mean, it's not like I'm condoning it, really. I'm helping these people after something horrible's happened to them.
Yeah, you're not like, oh, welcome, step right up for your lobotomy. This is more like, these people were lobotomized. We have to get them help, so we're bringing them to you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, then, if that's the case, I'm still not accepting money. I'm doing it for free.
Yeah. What a guy.
I can't live on free.
Yeah.
I need money. It's my job.
It's a year.
it's a whole year. That's right. I don't know, like what I'm being paid right now, minimum.
Yeah.
I just need a good salary. Like, as altruistic as it would be to do that job in general, I feel like that's not going to be super easy.
No.
You're going to go through some stuff.
Lots of crying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And something else I should point out, that you wouldn't be running this facility by yourself. And since most of the people that had lobotomies were women, and mostly they ended up in mental institutions, rape of these people was very, very common.
Do I get a free gun then?
Let's just say you got to keep your eyes peeled for any shenanigans going on behind closed doors.
That's fair.
I have to raise the price then, because I'm going to be a murderer after this.
Andy, I do really like you. I'm so sad now.
And this man, he was a hero.
Give me $100,000 and a Glock.
I was going to say $50,000. That seems like a fair year salary.
Yeah.
Like, just caring for the people is fine, but now I have to hunt down rapists.
I think I'll go with 52. That feels about right.
Yeah.
52. Just had to one up, man.
Yeah, I'm
letting you undercut me, Adam. You love that.
Well, I love stories about horrible things. I don't do super great actually around people who are miserable. That's not a good place to be.
These people are just going to happily smile at the walls.
Yeah, that's true. But they all have a story to tell, which they no longer can. Mm-hmm. So I'm probably going to need a bit just to...
And a Glock?
Like, man, just dragging yourself to work to go do that job is going to be rough.
It's going to be a rough year.
So I'm going to say, yeah, I'll do 100,000 too. We'll call it good at that.
Everybody gets a Glock.
I might also need a therapist stipend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the therapy is free. Do not go to that Freeman guy.
I'm just really depressed, Dr. Freeman.
It's a self-perpetuating really business. All right. Well, that's all we've got for this week. Remember, kids, hang on to your brains because they're really important. And we'll see you next time. Thanks to my co-hosts, and thank you so much for tuning in today. If you would like more information about today's episode, check out our website at acidpoppodcast.podbean.com. You can also find us on Twitter at acidpoppodcast and contact us at acidpoppodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us all the stars you can. Stay safe out there, and we'll see you next week.